Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, and today I get to talk to my ski buddy. That's how I know you, John, and that's pretty freaking awesome because you are also working with something that I'm deeply passionate about, which I think is systems, and you're doing that from a completely different perspective than what I've been approaching it through. So welcome to the podcast, John Andersson.
Thanks a lot, Amit. Thanks a lot. Pleasure to be here.
And you said you hadn't primed at all, so then this might be a bit of a cold shower to start with. But this is probably the hardest question we'll deal with today,
nice.
Right, to start with. And that is, who are you, Jon?
Yeah, such a difficult question, but also very easy, isn't it? Well, I guess I'm myself. I'm a passionate skier, passionate surfer. I love my family. I love my friends. And I'm also a bit concerned about what's happening to our world. I mean, who isn't, right, in these times? I've been that for quite some time. So it's led me to pursue a career in research, in sustainability-related research. So I guess work and career-wise, that's kind of what defines me. I do research on sustainability, particularly from a systems perspective.
That's good. And we started talking about, or I mean, we've touched upon it a couple of times, but it felt like we kind of really hit it off in the most northern part of Norway, in Lyngen, during a pretty foggy walk up a mountainside. That's kind of when we said again and acted on it that we should record something for this podcast.
Right.
So
right.
Sure, we're doing that now.
And that's such a nice context, isn't it? I actually think we started this conversation, is it 3 years ago now, in a skin track a bit further south. And then we took it up again a few weeks ago in the skin track far up north that you're referring to now. And actually, just to get in the mood, I found a little hill here next to where I live. So I'm actually walking uphill to, you know, kind of connect back to that time when we were talking about systems in the skin track.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. So, I mean, I think let's just start somewhere. And I was thinking somewhere could be, what is a system? What is the system?
Right. And I think that's the only question that is perhaps even more difficult to answer than the who are you question. Yeah, what is a system? I mean, I've been kind of struggling with that question for the better part of the last 8 years. I'm not sure that I'm any wiser, which I guess is often the case when you really delve into the details of something. When you start doing research, that is. But I guess, I mean, one can always depart from, you know, the general understanding, kind of, you know, how a system is spelled out in dictionaries and in textbooks as, you know, interacting parts that form some kind of unified whole. I think that's a good place to start. I think that's what a system is. Interacting parts that form a unified whole. And I guess, you know, looking at that definition, all these questions emerge. What part? What kind of interactions? What unified whole? How do you, you know, delineate all this? How do you use this to make sense of the world? Or is a system perhaps something that exists in the world? I think this is where it gets really interesting. And this is also where you can't really expect to find answers. I think you can expect to find opinions, positions, perhaps even, you know, strategies for how to use these words, terms, concepts to something meaningful.
Because I have an intuitive sense of what you're saying, like why you're saying what you're saying is so difficult, like why you would spend the better part of 8 years to try to like uncover or piece these things out some smart or not smart way. But at the same time, I also know that I wouldn't, if you would have said that a few years back, I would have been like, what do you mean it's a problem? Like, why is that? Like, that's not even, it doesn't sound that difficult. Like, it's just things. And like, I look at them and then I can see how they are. And then I know that it's a system. Why? Could you, is there a good example in your mind that would highlight like why this becomes an issue and like why, what the consequences could be if we, when we draw these boundaries arbitrarily or like when we think of opinions as the way things are in the world?
It's always difficult to find concrete examples, but I guess, I mean, you know, taking something from my own line of work, research I'm doing, we talk a lot about systems that relate to, you know, the transformation of industrial sectors towards more sustainability and so forth. And then we have these more specific systems concepts that are used a lot. You may be familiar with the term. Yeah?
Hold on one question. I'm seeing, jag ser nu att ditt den inte laddar upp. Sorry, go ahead with your example of what you're talking about. what's a way to explain this, why you spent 8 years thinking about what a system is in some more tangible terms?
Right. Well, I think why I chose to spend the better part of 8 years thinking about what a system is that when I entered my research field, I got this strong sense that researchers spoke about different things without realizing that they were speaking about different things. And I think that's a problem in many ways. And within research, the problem is that it becomes very difficult to kind of build cumulative knowledge unless you have a sufficient level of precision in the concepts that you use. I mean, of course, you have to allow for creativity. You have to allow yourself to bend terms and concepts. A lot of new knowledge actually comes from that. But at some level, you have to have a shared understanding of what part of the world that you are talking about. And in my line of work, we use the systems construct to delineate empirical domains, really. And if you don't do that properly, it becomes very difficult to compare studies, to make studies build upon each other, to assess the merits of studies, and so forth. I think it also creates other problems. I guess one example of that is when it comes to what we strive for in a sustainability context. I mean, we talk a lot about system change. We talk about system transformation. We talk about system replacement. We talk about the emergence of new systems, and we talk about the decline of old systems. And depending on how you have defined your system to begin with, all these words adopt very different meanings. I mean, take the food system, for example, the global food system. We need a global food system, right? In 100 years, you know, when we have hopefully solved all sustainability challenges that are facing us today, we will still have a global food system because as human beings, we need food. And I sincerely hope that we will be eating food, hopefully together in 100 years as well. However, the current global food system doesn't function the way we want it to function because it gives rise to all these social and environmental problems, right? So what we strive for is essentially a transformation of the global food system. However, if you define the system that you're interested in slightly differently, let's say that we, instead of talking about the global food system, we talk about the global beef production and consumption system, which is, of course, a subdomain of the global food system. It might be that that particular system must not transform for us to realize this utopia of sustainability, but rather that that system must actually disappear, or at least decline heavily for us to you know, be able to live within planetary boundaries. And I think that's kind of one example of where it actually matters how we construct our system. So yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that's cool. And then, so you said also initially, with regards to definition, you said that it's like the, you have parts that form, interacting parts that form some kind of whole. And now you pointed to sort of the global food system, and one part of that is the beef system, and one part of the beef system is, like, it could be both the cattle ranchers, but it could also be sort of the feed producers. And part of the feed producers are, I mean, these things really stack. But how does, in a way, like systems, it also feels like when we talk about systems, it could feel like something that's just over there somewhere that we have very little part in or very little power over. Mm-hmm. And so in your line of work, how does the system relate to the individual, our individual physical systems that are walking around?
Right. I think that, I mean, the way I'm used to defining and analyzing and indeed talking about systems, it's kind of obvious that human beings, as well as, you know, human beings as part of organizations, are a part of the systems I'm interested in. And that's because I'm often sort of reliant on a socio-technical systems perspective, where I'm not only interested in how, you know, physical, material entities are linked together and interact dynamically. I'm also interested in, you know, human norms, values, intentions, motivations, and acts as system elements. And I think that's different from how the term system is used in many other disciplines, particularly than the natural sciences, where systems are most often kind of hard and physical. So for me, there's definitely no kind of contradiction, if you will, between, you know, having a systems perspective and taking our role as agents, our, you know, constrained agency, but also our power as agents seriously.
Okay, and apart from, like, what would be an example or like something that you've looked at in your research that, like, again, because now we talked about the global food system and then we kind of offhandedly mentioned the meat production as part of that. But then if we would, like, I'm trying to make it tangible again, like to really ground it, like something that you can, that a listener could relate to, or like that I can relate to, just to like kind of really try to feel into like the different interactions and relations that you are looking at, and like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if it is tangible. Maybe it isn't. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the system we're talking about is so analytical, it's so constructed that it is simply not tangible. Of course, anything can be made tangible. But I mean,
But let's stick with that. Let's stick with that, because I like that intuition. And then But let's put that that intuition in relationship to sort of sustainability then, and like, because we talk about systemic solutions to sustainability, and if we don't address the systems level, then sustainability is, well, at least as far as I've understood, is probably impossible, right? So, yeah, where does that leave us? think out loud on that topic, please.
Okay, well, I mean, I can begin to think out loud a little bit. But I mean, I think I'll choose to take a little detour, actually. Because I think this, we often come back to this tangibility. I mean, how can we make things more concrete? And I think often when we talk about systems in this way, you know, when we want to make, perhaps as you said, when you want to make the listener perhaps understand, be able to relate, and so forth, it's very easy that we kind of fall into this way of talking about systems as something real, something that exists out in the world. And I'm not so sure that I think systems are real. I'm not sure that they do exist in the world. At least I find it interesting to challenge that idea. And I think it's important that we do. I think it's important that we talk about whether we use the systems construct as some kind of ontological device that we use to describe the world as it is, or as some kind of epistemological device that we use to kind of make sense of the world, build knowledge about the world. And I think in my line of work, I most often, or at least I try to use the systems construct in an epistemological sense. Because I think I do believe philosophically at a deep level that there are no kind of systems in an objective sense. I think the very idea of a system actually presupposes a human mind, a human assumption, some kind of subjective idea. Because I mean, if you think about it, coming back to this definition about the system as these interacting parts that form some unified whole, I mean, you can, if you depart from that, you can think about what is actually needed to point to a system, to not to define the system as a concept, but to actually specify a real system, if those were to exist. I mean, what do you need? And I think if you look carefully at the basic definition of a system for a couple of years, then you realize that I mean, you need boundaries, right? And in order to define those boundaries, you need some kind of idea about a unifying whole. And I think this idea about the unifying whole is sort of, it always stems from the human mind. It is constructed in a way. And I think these ideas kind of lead me to really question the merits of using systems as an ontological device. I think we are better off acknowledging that the world is complex. I mean, it consists of all these parts that are interacting. Note the similarities to the definition of a system. But we cannot find an objective criteria for calling certain parts and interactions a system and not others. So I think the only system that you could possibly find objectively in the real world is the entire real world. all other systems are necessarily constructed, I think. And that renders them epistemological device, in my view.
Mm.
So yeah, that was a slight detour.
Yeah, but a nice one. And what I'm hearing you speak to, so correct me if I'm wrong, please. But it's like what I'm hearing you to frame that in a different way would be this classic saying of the like a non-trivial relationship between maps and territory, that the map isn't the territory, and yet when we, depending on if we look at the map as the actual thing or not, that's going to really color how we behave in the world. And and so if we put ourselves back on that slope in the northern part of Norway a few months back, then we definitely had studied maps looking at that territory, and we, there were things on those maps that gave us clues about what we were doing. And at the same time, as we were in that territory, when we were moving, there was a lot of attention directed towards like, where is the snow? How is this slope? And where might there be like hidden traps or like wind loads, so that there might be an avalanche, or how do we position ourselves in relationship to one another so that, and you know, so that we can be safe or get to our goal, like get to the top or like whatever we wanted to do. And those, all of that information was definitely not in the map. And I'm thinking that it might be a way of describing what you just said in a different way, but like the map is a part of our understanding of the world, and then the sort of ontological reality of the world is much, much larger and much more complex because it interacts with us as we navigate it.
Definitely, very good metaphor. And I mean, it matters, the map matters, as you're saying. I mean, the map might not in a direct sense, you know, influence the territory, but by sort of influencing how we understand the territory, it makes us influence the territory. So I think that systems matter. I mean, they are performative, if you will, in different senses. I mean, when we construct systems, we foreground certain parts of the world, and we hide others in the background. And I think it's important to take that seriously. And I mean, I've encountered several different kind of problematic aspects of that in my work. For example, we talk a lot about systems of innovation. I'm sure you've heard about systems of innovation many times. I mean, this is an idea that kind of emerged in the late 1980s. It became popular during the 1990s. And the basic idea is that, and I mean, it's a good idea. The basic insight is excellent, which is that innovation is not only dependent on single firms, but innovation is rather the output of a complexity of interacting parts, ranging from, you know, institutional elements to technologies to a whole range of organizations beyond the individual firm. So researchers and policymakers alike more and more started using this idea to analyze the world, but also to kind of frame new policies, really. And when you think about that more deeply, so what is an innovation system? What is the unified whole of an innovation system? What does it do? And essentially, what kind of embedded in the idea of an innovation system is that it develops and diffuses novelties, new products, new processes, new technologies. So embedded in the very idea of an innovation system is that you want to promote novelty. You want to promote growth, in a sense. And I think this is an example where the idea of a system is kind of helps entrench that particular idea of what is normatively desirable, that particular idea of progress, if you will. Because you could have also chosen to rely on a different type of systems construct. I mean, imagine in the late 1980s if scholars hadn't developed the idea of innovation systems and kind of then contributed to, you know, policymakers making it their priority to strengthen innovation systems. What if we had instead talked about, you know, transformation systems? That the function of this system that we are talking about is to transform economies, industries, markets, whatever scale you want to be at. What would have happened with the discussion then? What would have happened with policymaking then? Is it perhaps so that we would have been more likely to highlight and act upon the negative consequences of some of the novelties that have been developed and diffused in the last couple of decades? I believe so. I definitely believe so. But I also know that talking about a transformation system instead of an innovation system is more difficult because it adds complexity. It adds attention to this multidimensionality that is, of course, a fundamental part of our world. Whereas an innovation system kind of reduces progress to this one-dimensional idea that novelty is always a good thing. And I guess we're all human. Easy to fall back on simplified ways to view the world. That was also a little detour. Another related... go for it.
No, go ahead. Another related? I can hold the thought that I had. Yeah.
No, I'll return to that. Go ahead.
I'm curious about what you just said too, because it sparks this whole thinking around the measurement. And so, I mean, I've studied business, and one of the sort of the dogmas of management is that what gets measured gets done. But what you're alluding to, what I'm hearing between the lines of what you're speaking to is a little bit like, well, it's a version of that, but it kind of, the arrow points the other in the other direction. Like that there would be like what gets done gets measured or something like that. And so that this, and this will be a detour from where we were, but it's like this idea that it's innovation took, or let me like kind of unfold the whole thought, because what I was feeling into was like, okay, so the 80s, that's about a decade after, let's say, there was a proper serious discussion about sort of the limits to growth, and there was some really good things that would be sort of the foundations for the field of sustainability in a way, sort of the popped up in the world. And in terms of what, I don't know if there's causality there, but at least there's like what popped up in my head is like this, if it was truly a crossroads between starting to look at systems of innovation as the solution to whatever those studies are pointing to versus systems of transformation, which could have been another way to address this particular thing. And that would have scattered our attention in a way so that we wouldn't have had these sort of unidirectional solutions, quote unquote solutions, I should say. And that could have had an incredible, another map could have had an incredible impact or influence on the state that we find ourselves in now, 50 years later. Yeah, so that was kind of the line of thinking that got me into thinking about measurement and again these boundaries that you mentioned before, that boundaries are a very integral part of the system. So if we believe that these boundaries are real, or if it's just something that we use to look at the world, and even if we're just using them to look at the world, knowing that it's not real, it really influences how we relate to the territory, to put us back on that slope again. There's something around, you know, even though the map isn't really, it is, as we're moving in a territory, we're off the map, so to say, but then the map has still told us, like, you should be roughly here and not over here, and you're able to go roughly here and not over there. And the question of, like, whether that is true or not, I mean, we know that if we bring different equipment on our trip, then we can go to different places. Like that really informs our road making choices, what stuff we bring with us, and how long we plan for the trip to last, and what type of effort we're planning to spend, and all of that stuff. So I'll stop rambling there, because this is another detour, but it's like those things kind of bubbled in me as you were talking about the systems of innovation and transformation, and how central that shift could be going forward, maybe, or could have been looking backwards.
No, definitely. And I think we're in the middle of that shift as we speak. We have been for quite some time, but it's still kind of happening, that I think we are kind of increasingly moving away from the idea of innovation as something worth striving for, the idea of innovation systems as something worth strengthening, towards a more kind of nuanced and multidimensional view, where we kind of take sustainability challenges seriously enough to actually start the discussion from there, and talk about what types of system transformations or transitions, if you will, that we need to actually solve the very urgent problems that we're facing. But I thought about something else. You know, this idea of, you know, what you measure gets done. I think that's it's also it's an important insight. And I think that's very much what I'm talking about when I'm questioning the idea of, or the usefulness of the innovation systems idea. But I think you can actually take that one step further. I think what you measure is not only what gets done, it's also what you start valuing. And I think that's another aspect where different ways to delineate systems have consequences. Because apart from this functional perspective that we talked about a bit now, that you can have a system that innovates, or you can have a system that transforms, you can have a system that produces, and etc. You can also have systems that consist of different types of parts, no matter what function they have. And I think in my line of work, and indeed in the kind of broad field of innovation studies, it is very common to only include social and technical parts in the systems that we study. We pay a lot of attention to actors, both individuals and organizations, pay a lot of attention to institutions, you know, laws and regulations, standards and routines, beliefs and attitudes. We even pay attention to materialities, but we limit that attention to technical components, machines, infrastructures. And we make this a priori exclusion of pretty much everything that we associate with the natural environment, ecological system elements, if you will. And I think that's another example of where it can become problematic to define systems in the wrong way. And in this case, it's partly a problem since, of course, the natural environment influences the system functions that we're interested in. If you're interested in you know, the determinants of innovation in Sweden, it makes a lot of sense to look carefully at the natural environment, because it will influence how the innovation system functions. But I think it's also a problem, and now coming back to this idea that what we measure is actually what becomes important. I think when we for long periods of time think in terms of socio-technical systems, I think we gradually start valuing the natural environment less. Mm-hmm. I think what we spend time with becomes valuable. Mm. And I'm not sure whether there's research to back up that assertion, but I still think so.
Yeah.
And I think what this kind of highlights, to kind of come back to, you know, what's difficult about systems and why we're even talking about this, it's that very few people see this delimitation, that you actually often make a structural delimitation of the system you're talking about. A structural delimitation that in a sense exists in parallel to the functional delimitation that you make. So when you define a system, you have to think in several dimensions at the same time. You have to specify what function that you're interested in, what types of structural parts that your system consists of. You might even want to make a geographical delimitation. Hell, I mean, we only have so much time and resources. We can't study the whole world at once. So maybe I choose to focus on Gothenburg, where I happen to be, just because I have to. The time and resource constraints. And you can even kind of extend these ideas into some kind of temporal dimension, where you actually, when you study a system, at least if you take the act of analysis seriously, you have to specify what time period you actually observe the system during. And perhaps most crucially, whether you look at the system as it was in the past or as it might become in the future. So specifying systems is a multidimensional act, and very few researchers, policymakers, intellectuals, very few people in general treat it as such. And I think that creates problems.
I'm still stuck on this idea of the, well, we measure, you know, directs our sense of value.
Mm-hmm.
And then this whole, I mean, whatever we value is kind of what's worth exchanging. I mean, it's like, in a way, whatever we value, we want more of, because it is something that we would give something up for, if you will. So kind of just pointing to what you, I mean, if we value money, or if we value material things, then we would figure out ways to acquire those things. If we value time in nature, then we would probably try to acquire time in nature, mm-hmm. if you will. And that was like and in a way, it like relates to this whole notion of time as, I mean, in a way you could say time comes, like time is infinite. Time is always there, right? And so, but there is another way that our biological beings, the way that we are made up as people, are, it's probably the only scarce resource, right? Like the only limit, at least for now, that there's a limit to how much time you can acquire, regardless of how much other stuff or things you have.
Right.
You can kind of get a little, you can barter a little bit on the margins, like you can push it a little bit further or hope to. But end of the day, that's kind of a variable that we need to relate to because of our biology.
right?
Another thing that I've that popped up in my attention was like that I keep saying this thing in some of the businesses that I run and so forth. Like, we're living in an increasingly complex world. And then, as you were talking before, and again, like with regards to the innovation versus the transformation systems thing, or even what you just said about the sort of the structural, functional, geographical, temporal, at least, restrictions of like boundaries that we need to consider when we define systems. I'm just wondering that this increased complexity, or it just struck me that this increased complexity is more a result of how I'm looking at the world rather than the world actually changing. So back to your initial point of the ontological versus the epistemological definitions of the system in a way.
Right.
And I don't know how yet, but I have a feeling that it's going to influence a little bit of how I move in the world to start thinking of it as something that's always been complex, if you will.
Hello.
Yep.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so where were we? The world is very complex. It's actually increasingly complex. And I think you said something about that possibly being a consequence of how we look at the world. And maybe so. I think it's an interesting thought. Maybe we, as human beings, can always find complexity if we look for it. But I guess the world is also getting increasingly complex. At least I experience it that way. And I think if we had a good way of measuring complexity, I think it's increased, at least on our little planet.
But so complex in this sense would mean more relationships, that things are more interrelated in a way. Is that how we talk about it? Or?
That's a good question in itself. What is complexity? What's the difference between something being complicated and something being complex? No, but I think for me, it boils down to, I guess, the number of parts, the number of interactions. Perhaps most importantly, what emerges from these interacting parts.
And something's going on with your internet connection.
Yeah.
That makes it very choppy. So I didn't catch any of the last thing you said.
Looks really good on my part, though.
Okay.
Strange.
Try that again. What was the last thing you said with regards to the complexity?
I think we almost delved into a little discussion about what complexity is. And that's, of course, an interesting and difficult topic in itself. I think, about the number of parts, about the number of interactions. And I guess it's also about the extent to which you have emergent phenomena and the extent to which they are important. And I guess there with the word important, you almost slide over into this idea that complexity is something that we create because we determine what's important. We don't determine. The way we look at the world does not determine how many parts the world has, nor does it determine how those parts interact, at least not in the short term. However, what types of phenomena that we find important, that is determined by how we look at the world. So maybe complexity is at least to some extent in the eye of the beholder.
And so, I'm going to kind of pause, put a pin in this, and explore another vector. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you and I think, talked about at some point was this, and we touched upon it already, but I wanted to dig a bit deeper into it, like the importance of maps. So I'm thinking, like, as a systems scientist, my projection on you is that what you do a lot is to draw maps of systems. And given all of the stuff that we've talked about now, that's either a useless or really dangerous profession.
Definitely. Or well, if I may correct you there, it's either a useless or a very dangerous or a very useful profession.
Nice. But so why? Why map? Like, let's see what that takes us. If I ask like that,
why map?
Yeah, given everything we just said.
Because I think there is a difference. There's something that we don't really catch with the map territory analogy. That is actually there when it comes to the systems and the world, and especially how we use systems to make sense of the world. When you go into a new territory, you don't have to bring a map, not a physical map, at least. However, we always create systems. We always have created systems, and we always will create systems. I think drawing systems, making sense of the world by sort of black boxing some things, some scales, looking carefully at other scales, but kind of looking at the interaction of parts rather than the interaction within parts, and to kind of be agile in how we move across these different scales and perspectives of observations. I think that's a fundamental part of being human. That's a fundamental part of how we understand the world. At the very least, it's a fundamental part of how we talk about the world together. Then, of course, we don't have to use the term system. But I think using the term systems and kind of taking this definition of a system seriously, complementing this definition of a system with attention to these different dimensions in which systems must be specified, I think that's a more honest way to talk about the world. I think that is a way to reveal and to highlight what we choose to put in the foreground and what we choose to put in the background. And I don't think there is any better device than the idea of a system. I think that's my spontaneous thought. I think that's why we need systems. To make explicit something that we would do anyway. Because of course, as you alluded to at the start, or at least now when we introduce this topic, I mean, system as any kind of tool, linguistic or technological, systems can be used for good and for bad. They can be useless and they can be useful. It's all a matter of how we use the tool. But it's a tool that we cannot not use. Because we cannot make sense of the whole world at once. Because the world is too vast, too complex. We have to look at one part of the world at a time. And why not call that part that we look at a system when it really matters what specific part of the world that we do look at? As it does when we do research, as it does when we formulate government policy, and perhaps also as it does when we engage with, you know, deep, hopefully meaningful philosophical discussions.
Yeah, I love that. And what I'm hearing you, I mean, in a way, what I'm challenging myself to do is maybe to if I replace the map territory distinction with the calling it like a systems territory distinction, mm-hmm. and weaving in that multidimensionality that you are kind of recommending when you take a systemic approach to things, that becomes really interesting because it's a way of, then it becomes like a way of mapping my attention almost. Like right. It's the two basic, like if I imagine a triangle and then like in the beginning, the map and the territory are at the bottom of that and the attention kind of sits at the top. Then it almost becomes like the attention and the territory is sort of the basic parts, and then the system comes on top, or like the map comes on top as an emergent phenomenon from that. And to look at how I drew the map is really useful, especially if I'm interested and concerned about doing things differently. If I'm concerned about doing things in the way that I've habitually done them always, then why bother? But if we are in a time period when transformation might be important, at least that's the story, then shifting focus to how the map was drawn and who did it and all of the dimensions of that map drawing would be probably really, really useful.
I also think, kind of building on that, I think it's very useful to talk about systems when you want to solve problems. I mean, it's not a coincidence that the kind of the idea, the notion of systems has, I would argue, mainly been developed in the engineering, perhaps also management sciences, at least a very influential strand of systems science has been oriented towards solving problems. Because I think if you contrast this idea of just looking at the world and its networks of relationships of different parts with this idea of I guess using some kind of scissor to identify a part of that network and calling that a system, what that enables you to do is to talk about problems. It enables you to talk about strengths and weaknesses. Because all of a sudden you have a unified whole or a function that you can use to kind of make sense of the idea of a problem or a weakness or a strength for that matter. And I think that's what makes it particularly useful in these times when we have an abundance of problems to address.
That sparks something in me. Where I kind of want to, but it has to do with words, I guess. It's like how we understand problems and things like that. But I'm curious about what if we would start drawing systems to solve for opportunities instead? Mm. Like this whole idea of solving problems, I think is interesting. And then you said like, then you get strengths and weaknesses. And I think in a way that's really what you would want out of it. Like when you start mapping the strengths and weaknesses and you can start, I mean, a lot of the complexity people, they're talking about modulation rather than like solution, or like you need to do something to see what comes out because of the complexities, like the entanglements, mm-hmm. if you will. And I'm curious about, this frame that we have about solving problems, because as you say, like with a problem, in order to define a problem, you have to make a set a boundary, and depending on where you set that boundary, it's going to really influence your solution. And we know, at least, I mean, I think there's some good solid mathematics around this whole idea that as long as we are not addressing the whole, we are working with suboptimal solutions for whatever we're trying to do. Literally. So I'm wondering about sort of what happens if we shift the lens towards, addressing opportunities or solving opportunities through systems instead. And like, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I'm sympathetic to that idea. It's much, much nicer to talk about opportunities rather than challenges, right? But then again, aren't they just two sides of the same coin? What's really the difference between a problem and an opportunity? Can't you turn any problem into an opportunity and any opportunity into a problem? Doesn't it just degenerate into some kind of word game? That's not to say it's not important. So I guess my point is that definitely, let's start imagining systems that reap opportunities. And I mean, I guess one can think about that at different scales, but I mean, take the most complex system we talk about, the global economy. What's the function of the global economy as a system? That's something that's worth thinking about, I think. And I guess a lot of fans of Latin or Greek perhaps might think that the function of the global economic system.
Good. That's cool.
It happened.
I'll address what I think you said, and then you have to correct me if I fucked up the point, because I heard like maybe 25% of it.
I wonder if it made sense.
And what I think you said was something around sort of problems and opportunities, like those are word games, and it's like kind of two sides of the same coin. And I definitely agree with that. But there's something around. Let's put it this way, like the image for me, the way that I feel them in my body a little bit is like that problems are like mountain tops. Like we get to the peak and then we go down again. And like that's solved. That's a mountain checked off, mm-hmm. You know? Whereas opportunities is like endless. It's like a horizon rather that we would constantly sort of navigate mm-hmm. towards. And it's like the point with the horizon is, of course, that you never get there. So if we orient towards different opportunities, as soon as we are getting close, other opportunities are going to have appeared because of the nature of us moving, you know? And so there's something like that. Like there's always the other slope, like the next thing you would want to go to. And so you keep working on it. So it becomes more of a continuous process than like the mountain peak, go down again, mountain peak, go down again. Like it's a different way of, and you probably, you know, an opportunity consists of several problems. To be addressed, but it's always sort of keeping the eye on that next thing, like on the next horizon and so forth. And we're navigating while looking at that next thing and also sort of conserving our energy, because if we spend all of our energy getting up on that one mountaintop, then what do we have left? Like, it's like there's no point in doing that, because it might kill us and all of that stuff. But it's also like you would want to be able to keep pursuing the next, like it's the long game. It's like the infinite game type logic that would come in versus like problems for me feels like, even though they are part of the same, I agree with that. There's something around the way that I understand problems as more finite games, if you will, in that terminology.
Mm. Interesting. I don't think I've thought about it that way. I associate what you're saying with, you know, some kind of need I think we have as a human society to keep striving. I think we need to set goals that we can't achieve. But that's also, I mean, coming back to sustainability, that's also why I'm often quite uncomfortable talking about sustainability as a goal, because I think it's a pretty lame goal, isn't it? I mean, I and many scientists with me can probably, you know, describe sustainable futures that aren't that interesting, you know, where we don't really thrive as much as we could. So, I mean, I've always played with the idea to kind of, you know, replace sustainability with something else. I know people talk about thrivability. I think that's pretty good. And I think it alludes a bit to what you're to what you're saying. But I also connect this, you know, idea of moving towards one mountain top, but still kind of keeping our eyes open and perhaps change directions. I think that relates a lot to the notion of reflexivity when it comes to the systems that we delineate and promote. That we must understand that we don't specify a system one time. It's something that we should at least do continuously and reflexively as new information is revealed about the phenomenon that we're interested in. And I guess that's where a lot of systems-oriented science has failed in the past and also been heavily criticized for doing so. And I think that's also one of the reasons why many scientists and thinkers are a bit skeptical towards the idea of a system. That it kind of, for many, it comes with, you know, these connotations of something fixed, something stable, and so forth. And it doesn't have to be. If we don't treat it as such.
Yeah, that's a big one. But it's almost like you would want to get the, I mean, it comes into, for me, it kind of folds into this idea of maybe what we were talking about before, or like, actually, I spent some time, I had the privilege of hanging out with like a Sufi teacher the other week, and he said something around that understanding stands in the way of knowing a lot of the time. And I thought that was good, because in this context it just means that, I mean, understanding as a noun, that is that's unattainable, but understanding as a verb, that's something that keeps happening, that we keep trying to understand, that's a completely different story. Speaking to the reflexivity that you just brought in, like that if we have a stance where we try to keep understanding constantly, that is very much aligned with how I am trying to cultivate my moving in the world, if you will. Like I want to build that capacity to keep understanding things constantly.
And I think that's an important, I think that's always been an important virtue, but it might also have grown increasingly important as we, you know, move into this more complex world, coming back to that idea. We're also, you know, more interconnected globally, face different types of problems, often of a wicked nature, and so forth. So I think reflexivity is getting more and more important. That said, I mean, you also have to recognize that there are many situations where we cannot be as reflexive as we wish we could be. I mean, tell a PhD student working on some kind of systems study that they have to, you know, question and reiterate their system delineation every month. You would drive that PhD student insane. So, I mean, you have these, you know, practical constraints where we, for obvious reasons, have to fix our frame of reference. And I think that's kind of, you know, I'm strolling through a forest as we speak here, and it's kind of course, I mean, I want to keep moving my head, because there's so much beautiful to look, so much important to see, but in order to see the details, I have to be very still. That means I will, you know, miss out on some things, but I'll see the things I'm looking at more clearly. So we have to allow ourselves to fix our frame of reference, but still kind of keep this idea of reflexivity in our minds at the same time. It's the classic dilemma, you know, thinking two thoughts at the same time.
Yeah, and also this sort of notion of the, I mean, I know that Ian McGilchrist has been doing a lot of work, and he means it in a quite sophisticated way, but it's like these different jobs of the right and left hemisphere. I mean, that strict divide has been criticized, but in a way it's like that you have one part of the brain that's really looking at and focused on the parts and the details and like the fixed point of view, and then you have another part which is very much more engaged with the whole and maybe looking at the frame itself. And so this whole idea of like metacognition and all of that stuff, but that those two processes has to, if we can engage with them at the same time, that's probably a really good way of interacting with the world. I mean, and that also means that we can do things, like we can actually finish things and like jump off of something new. And speaking of your maps as well, I mean, sometimes I'm supposing that instead of just keep redrawing the same map, it might be good to say that, okay, this is a map. Now this is a map. And then you start drawing the next map from that map, or you know, you build on whatever you did before. But then to put that temporal boundary down and say like, okay, I'm done with this now, might be a good way of getting out of some of the frames that you might be stuck in that you weren't aware of. You know, you might have to refix the frame, if you will. With some interval. And if that's a PhD, you know, a 4-year PhD thing, or if that's monthly or weekly or daily or hourly or minute by minute, then let's see. I came across this really interesting idea around that with regards to like computational capacity and AI and all of that stuff that's happening as well at the moment, where an idea was that the AI might be able to actually refix our frames with a much higher resolution than we will ever be able to do, but still keep, you know, sense making, which I thought was a hopeful use of that technology.
Yeah, maybe so. Fingers crossed.
So if we start to round off now, like what would you like to kind of bring in as a little bit of an epilogue or like a start to round this off that is important that I completely missed because of my attention span and frame of reference?
Good question. I don't know if my memory is that good. But I mean, we've touched upon many interesting things. I guess that the key takeaway is that we have to take this idea of systems seriously. I think or at least I think that people should pay a bit more attention to this word that they're often using in passing to, you know, refer to something that is complex, and kind of think a bit more carefully about what they actually mean and what they need to specify, to really be clear about what they mean, and perhaps also about whether they mean something that is actually real or whether they refer to their frame of reference. I think all this matters for, you know, the collective conversation that we're all engaging with and that actually, you know, shapes our future. So nothing could be more important.
Yeah, I like that, because I mean in you are actively or passively engaged in this conversation in a way. Like I think that's a nice consequence of what you said, like with regards to like this conversation that we're all engaged in. But it is, and also like what you're pointing to, which I would put in words of like sort of the recursivity maybe of this, like that it's important to pay attention to the systems because they inform us, but as we draw them, inform them. And so there's like there are two arrows to really look at and hold those two thoughts, as we said now in the end, in mind at the same time.
Definitely.
Cool. If people want to find you or interact with you or work with you, I mean, why should they find you, and where can they find you?
I think they should find me if they want to talk about systems, and particularly how we can use the notion of systems to make sense of the world. And I'm found in Gothenburg as of September as a senior researcher at RISE, Research Institutes of Sweden.
So I might post your LinkedIn link, if you agree, in the as a link in the show notes so people can...
Please do. Please do. I'm also often found at, you know, various beautiful mountains across Scandinavia. Hopefully with your company.
Yes, that will happen again for sure. And that's probably already happened as well. And all of that stuff.
Yeah. Time.
thank you, John.
Thank you, Amit.
This is really fun.
I enjoyed it.